because I think it was women's parliament today. So the story which was not off, so there was big miscommunication somewhere, but really, I think that it is wrong. We cannot allow, we cannot work at that. So everyone is welcome in the meeting. And then, are there any apologies, Mr. Emmons?
Just as we receive an apology from Mr. McIntosh and Advocate Albert and Ms. Sue van der Merwe, and the Chief President will be arriving late during the course of the meeting. And Mr. Hung is, will be leaving us shortly because he's attending a Minerva's meeting later. And Mr. McIntosh really will also leave us.
All right. I see the hand of Dr. James and then Mr. Mowat.
Thank you, Chair, Acting Chair, and thank you for starting the meeting. I just want, for the record, to lodge my strongest objection to the fact that we are only starting now. The meeting is scheduled to start at 9 o'clock. This is not the first time this has happened. And just for the record, I'd like to lodge the DA's objection to the fact that there is no leadership being shown when it comes to starting on time of this committee.
I wish I had spoken before Dr. James for a mere reason, or for the, you know, to show that when you apologize, you are really apologizing on behalf of all of us as ANC. Indeed, there was a misunderstanding, but we really do wish to apologize, Mr. Mpatlele, Member Kwang, and Member Hilewis and Dr. James. It's not usual that a member speaks like this in a meeting and says, we really do apologize, but I just want to reiterate that it's not a good thing, and I don't think this will occur again. It's just because of that misunderstanding. And I think even Dr. James knows that even if we are late, we would be struggling maybe with one member or two members just to correct. But where you find that it's a number of us, it's not usual. So it's not because we want to show disrespect. On the contrary, we regard our colleague members in the highest effects.
Thank you, Olu Mabasa. I think it's acceptable. Even the objection of the DA will be noted on that issue, that reservation. But also at the same time, we really have to welcome Mr. Patel, Comrade Patel, in our committee. We really need that lone voice name. And in particular, when it was articulating in Africa yesterday in the House, I was very pleased that times are really changing. The window change here in the House. We are welcome to Patel. We hope to see you regularly. Let's look at the agenda for today. When you look at the agenda for today, there are about four items, 5 items which you must deal with. What I'll appeal, I want to make an appeal before we adopt the agenda. But let's start with the last item, with the Kenya report. Because those guys who were there, they're forming quorum. I can see Mr. Mabaza, Mr. Hilewis, and Mr. Wang, they're all here. So can we start with that report, get it out of the way, so that the chairperson can come and deal with her staff to work on it. I don't know. I'm suggesting that let us rearrange the agenda. So we start with number 5, and then after number 5, to go to the subcommittee report on cooperatives, and then follow the listing as it is. Can we have a mover for that agenda? Rumabasa. I move the amended agenda. Yes. Mr. Hilewis is supporting that. All right, honourable members, we know very well that we had a wonderful SKPG to Kenya between the 29th and the 2nd, between the 29th of July to the 2nd of June, of August. So we are having all the members here, and the report is before us here. And then this report was circulated last week, and then the members were requested to comment upon that. When I looked through the report, I found that the content of the report is accurate. It captures the talent observations which we had there and the learning experiences which we did get. We also request that if there were any recommendations, because this report is actually precursor to our dealing with the bill, the cooperative amendment bill. That's why we will not go to town on the end of recommendations. Because whatever recommendation we want to have, this was study visit, it must have an impact on the bill, on the face of the, on the shape of the bill, which is going to take. So here we are having this report before us. Everyone is having that report. Can we go page by page so that we deal with that and then dispose thereof? Or can I ask you a question? When did you receive the report? Did you get it yesterday or what? Did the members get a chance to go to the report? Even those who are not part of the delegation. Those who are not part of, did you get the report earlier? Mr. Babasa?
Yes, definitely. It was emailed, I think, yesterday, sir.
Honorable what?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't get a report yesterday.
Honorable, the secretary, it was emailed with the same report as well. Nothing of something has changed that you received at the meeting on which you commented on.
If everyone is comfortable that the report was received on time, can we go through the report page by page so that we can formally adopt it as the report for the visit? Let's go to page one. On page one, is there any issue or question which wants to be raised? Well, fine. Kenyan, the member of the co-op, the operator. Everyone is comfortable with page one, let's go to page two. Definitely, Mr. Hammond was there, Mr. Mabasa was there, Mr. Hill was there, Mr. Wang was there. Let's go to page three. Nothing of substance. As it is, let's go to the principles of COP. Those seven principles, I hope that you'll find our way in our co-op. Those principles are good. There's something we can adapt. That's what I like about that. And I said that this one must be the of our co-op. They must take that. Mr. October, we're going to put it in our bill. Those principles as they are. So that our trip should not have been vain. Number five, page five. Yes. The Kenyan economy is based on cooperatives, Mr. Patel. I wish you were there. How I wish you were there. When looking at the people breaking themselves out of poverty through their share will, without the support from government, on their own, through cooperatives, I think that one is critical. If you can go through the report, you can see that can learn a lot out of that. Page six, the role of government of Kenya. That provides training, legislation, no financial support. People have to drag themselves out of poverty. I think that's something we can learn. Page 7. Page 8. Page 8, I think the critical aspect is the issue of the tribunal. Commissioner. You know, in Kenya we are a commissioner. Yeah, we are a commissioner. And the commissioner, you can see the issue of the tribunal and the investigative police of Kenya. I think that there's something you must learn. Actually, we encourage the department to interact more with that Department of Cooperative Development and Marketing. Because there's a whole college dedicated to the support of the co-ops. A college which has been converted to an university. I think that is a breakthrough indeed. We can learn something out of that. And then Mr. Mabasa is already registered for the Bachelor of Corporate Business. No, basically, what has happened there is that I think that everything which is there is really the reflection of what transpired there. We go to the concluding remarks. I think that the first one, which is very important, 11.1, the Cooperative Movement incorporates offices of Kenyan Life, as people in the high office, such as the President of Kenya, Honorable Mwai Kibaki, as well as owners belong to a cooperative. Even the President himself, Mr. Mpakele, there's a cooperative there, Harambee. So it is that all the staff members of that presidency, plus the President himself, they belong to a cooperative in the office. That's how serious they are. So it means that from the chef up to the highest office in the country, everyone is a cooperative. Actually, they even indicated for us that it's going to be difficult for you to be elected in parliament if you are not a member of the cooperative. You'll not be elected if you are not a member of the cooperative. So I think that one of the equalization of wealth is very critical. So I think that it's high time that we do that, although there are certain things we cannot do in our country, because you know, our laws are a little bit advanced than the others. Yeah, I think that aspect is very, but what is critical? And the acknowledgement, and the recommendations, there are only two recommendations which we agree with, because this is a very important question for this cooperative, that the committee should consider inviting Ms. Dr. Wema. That's what the management committee did. The first thing, when we came back at the management committee level, because Mr. Mayema is the one who is the regional coordinator for the region, Eastern African region of cooperatives, so that he can make his own input in our business and move forward as an expert. And then number two, I think that the TTI should develop a campaign and motto for the promotion of cooperative movement in terms of wealth creation and poverty reduction. I think that's the task of the very and the bills we're having in front of us. I think that before can I allow a mover for the adoption of this report and then make a comment, because we comment around that. Those members of the both cooperative members which were there, or those guys who are in Kenya, we've already formed a cooperative. And then so the leader of the cooperative is Mr. Mabasa. Is there anyone who can propose the adoption of this report so that we can take it out of the way? Mr. Hillwood? Yes? Moving for the adoption of the report.
I'm doing the adoption, sir.
Any seconder? Honorable Mabasa?
I move for seconding the report, but I also wish to commend the Secretariat that to have a report that gets us adopted with almost no corrections, you know, as a committee, I believe I'm speaking on behalf of other members as well, that we appreciate this dedication and quality. Keep it up.
But thank you, Mr. Bobas. I'll concur with you. Although we know very well that English is our fifth language, you know, I think those guys who are dealing with language will come and clear up anything language-wise yet. You know? Because sometimes you can feel that there might be something not right here. But you know, a Zulu boy is a Zulu boy, a Xhosa boy is a Xhosa boy, a Sotho boy is a Sotho boy. It's not in English. So I think that they'll clear it up before they put it to the ATC. So when can I get in the ATC? By tomorrow? All right, no. You can have it tomorrow on the ATC. It will really be appreciated. But what I also like with this report, it was timeless, within a period of a month, it's presented to the House. I think it's good. I think, but at the same time, I'll have to appreciate the delegation which went to China. I know to China. To Kenya. Really, that was a wonderful delegation. I think that even the impression which were created in the Kenya, they were so flabbergasted by the fact that it was a multi-party committee. But they could not feel that it was a multi-party committee, the way the operation was. The cooperation and the support of each other. I think those guys who were there really made my job very easy. Also on the side of the department, and also on the side of our embassy in Kenya, the way the work was coordinated, it was of high quality. That's why it's highly appreciated. That's why you feel that. That's why this is one of the reports which didn't take long. I remember when we went to the WTO, it took almost 2 months before it was prepared. But really, this one, I think that the cooperative spirit was very high. But I think that the issues we are dealing with, that we are dealing with the economy of the country. So everyone, even everyone is interested, the economy rises each and every day. So thanks a lot. for making my work so easy. And then let's hope that this report will turn to something better as we shape up our legislation. Can we go to the second item on the agenda, which then will be the issue of the report of the subcommittee on the cooperative arrangement bill? Is there a report you want to table, Mr. Mabasa, as the leader of that? Sure.
Yes, Comrade Chair, we do have a two-page report that has been distributed, and I will just highlight some of the key issues from there. I will ask our legal advisor, Advocate Van Merwen, to come in and make remarks, and I will ask also our we also have another advocate here, advocate just the name again, Advocate Small will also make remarks, and then Mr. Ndumo, the chief director, to make a remark, and members of the subcommittee on our side will also make remarks. But the meeting was held on the 23rd, I think the third, if not the fourth meeting thus far. And some of the key issues highlighted there was the very point that we made of the seven principles that they be incorporated into a bill. And also, there were a lengthy discussion on the financial statement. We will remember that we have those auditing teams that have made input. So on the financial statement, a lengthy discussion took place there. The advocates and Mr. Ruma will speak more at length on that to show the differences. And as well as the social and the management report to be included in the definitions, we will request again our experts to speak to that more at length. The cooperative reporting framework is being developed. The DTI is busy with that. But for this to happen effectively, it will mean that we will have to request a house to allow that. So, that will be drafted when the meeting accepts. And the independent reviewer to be defined in the bill, so that the definitions, it was emphasized that they be defined fully, so that when people read the act, when it ultimately is adopted, it's easy for them to understand the meaning of QA. And then we then go to the next area there, number 5, the continuation of the DTI input on submissions received. You'll recall that in the last PC, the DTI made input, but it did not make input right after the end in this meeting. In this meeting, your input had not gone right up to the end. But in the subcommittee, we then proceeded to take the input right up to the end, and then a discussion ensued. And in that discussion, some of the highlights that came up is the need to align our bill with the International Cooperative Alliance, as well as with the International Labour Organization's Recommendation 193. And the word proxies, that took us quite some time in the subcommittee to discuss proxies, but I think it was a useful discussion because when the decision ultimately gets reported, I mean the decision of the subcommittee, you will realize that it has given enough thought and it has engaged at length, because that issue of proxies was quite confusing, but now I think it's less intricate now that it has gone through that discussion. You'll realize when the excess report, it will come out clear. The withdrawal of the shares, where Saudi exits the cooperative, whether he can do so within a year, whether he can do so within 5 years, whether... But what was primary there was the interest of the cooperative to continue. What the phasing must decide that it protects the life of the cooperative above the right of the sitting member to receive shares. Cooperative Development Agency, concerns were raised with the potential duplication of tasks with CEDA, CIFA, and municipalities. But also it was a question of how should it relate to these bodies, as well as how should it relate to all the spheres of government. But the complementarity element was appreciated at the end of the discussion. Not so much the contradictions. The tribunal opposition to the establishment of a tribunal expressed by the stakeholder, the DTI was of the view that the tribunal will be accessible and will operate as mobile service. So it's an issue that we still have to discuss, and so that by the time we make a decision, it's well informed. And I think on the tribunal, we should also borrow on international experience, borrow on other countries' experiences, and find out if they are utilizing a similar tool like a tribunal, so that when we make a decision, it's well informed. The last part, number six, the clarification of the bills and the process forward. It's that issue that we discussed of the tagging, the 75 through 76. We have discussed it here before. Even in the subcommittee, we have discussed it before. It's just that it is a difficult matter. It's a intricate matter. So don't get surprised if it keeps visiting us in the meeting. The more we discuss it, the better, so that we eliminate or reduce the possibility of mistakes. With regard to additional submissions, the subcommittee was of the view that as long as the committee is deliberating on the bill, it should consider additional submissions as well as consider requesting further input from stakeholders. An example was made here that the telecoms and universities, some of those institutions are dealing with economic matters. Some of them even to some degree to discuss cooperatives. It would be good to get the input from them, because by so doing, we are also planting seeds of cooperatives thriving in training institutions. With regard to the visit to KZN and Mpumalanga, because there are some changes, the Secretary will speak to that. Having made this point, I would propose, Comrade Chair, that but the subcommittee members will also correct me if I'm looking it wrongly. I would propose that Mr. Ndumo continues from where he had left off in making an input to the PC. And at the end, then the two advocates will also come in and the subcommittee members will also come in and the house at last. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. But if I've missed something, subcommittee members, if they can please correct me, although I was just making highlights, because you will still have to speak at length on the issues that I touched.
Thank you, Honourable Vassar. I think members of the committee, here is the report of the subcommittee, and I think that this is the third subcommittee meeting which we had, which is good, showing good progress on that regard. So the issues which are raised here, and four, the issues of need to incorporate the seven principles into the body of the bill. I think that one is valid. If it is in the preamble, it's not going to be legally binding, then I think that something must be done so that they can be binding. I think it's a correct proposal that must be brought to the committee. I think that the committee must be able to support that and adopt it. But in this report, this is the report of the subcommittee, which is coming to the PC, of which the PC must be able to make its own people input and enrich it so that we adopt this thing as they are. Is there any member of the committee who wants to make any comment about the report as we get it from here? One, if there's none, I can see that the issues were highlighted by advocate for another member. Can you expand at the committee level while you're making this proposal here, in particular for point A up to G?
Yes, I can. I'm just not sure if we should not perhaps follow the proposal that DTI presents, and then I'll be given an opportunity to present to the committee in full, because I've prepared a presentation on those recommendations. So I don't know. I can do it now, but it might make more sense if there's actually something on the screen that I speak to. Because some of the concepts are a bit up in the air if you don't have everything in front of you.
I think that the thing is coming from the advocate. Members, I think that we can go with that. Can the members of the department make a presentation?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. We are very busy. And Chair, what we're going to do is to just continue where we left off. We are not going to go to the report. Most of the issues have already, members have heard them. So we're going to, we ended up, the first item that we needed now to deal with was the juristic person, which I will then take it to continue from there. That is the approach that I think we've agreed on. Issue is in page 6, line 17 of the amendment bill, and the two organizations, NUPSA and FAFTU, raise some concerns. The concern that they raise is that there needs to be limits on the ability of juridic persons to be part of primary cooperatives. Juridic persons, by their nature, can wield more power and or influence and or resources than individuals, particularly poor individuals, who are the people who South African cooperative policies wish to attract to form and join cooperatives. So the response that we made there, ZTI, which is to say that the International Cooperative Alliance amended the definition for cooperatives to refer to persons to allow juridic persons to be part of cooperatives, so that what happens is that you want within the primary cooperatives for cooperatives, for members to establish a cooperative which could either be a natural person, a mixture with juridic persons, or only juridic persons. The Act adopted the definition for cooperative as defined by the ICA. And the definition reads as follows: a cooperative is an autonomous association of persons united voluntarily to meet their common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through a jointly owned and democratically controlled enterprise. The ILO recommended a recommendation 190 referred to in the preamble of the bill and endorsed by South Africa also speaks of persons as members of a cooperative. Internationally, most countries have already aligned their cooperative definition to that of the internationally recognized ICA definition for cooperatives. So we as South Africa, and in fact also the Act, the 2005 Act, aligned itself with that recommendation 193. And then in that regard, we are saying therefore that these chosen persons must be included there. Freedom of association is a human right and should allow persons to form legal entities that are suitable to their needs and requirements. Freedom of association enables persons and small companies to share services and to increase their competitive advantages against bigger companies. Cooperatives that consist of both natural and terrestrial have proven to be often more economically viable than ones only consisting of natural persons. In some countries, close to entire sectors are organized on the cooperative principle. These cooperatives are internationally competitive and able to compete against multinationals or bigger companies. Sectors that internationally typically consist of predominantly cooperatives formed by mostly or exclusive juridical persons are hairdressers, pharmacies, etc. It is often more competitive than franchises and offers price advantage to consumers. The argument that legal persons overrule natural persons in decision making is mitigated by the fact that cooperatives by nature are democratic. The bill requires category A and B, primary cooperative, to apply to the principles of one member, one vote, and for category C, primary cooperative, secondary cooperative, and apex cooperative, formed after voting per member is limited to 15% of votes. The cooperative principle, inter alia, dictates that membership should be voluntary and open, hence have democratic member control. Cooperatives may stipulate in their constitution if juridic persons may be or may not form part of the cooperative, and they should a maximum apply to the numbers of juridic persons that may join the cooperative. So what we're saying is that the right of whether a cooperative will have juridic persons or natural persons, that right must be left to members, and members will have to decide in their constitution whether they want to have juridic persons or they want to be purely natural persons. So the bill must enable those particular permutations, all of them, and those rights must be given to members to determine that particular aspect. The argument that juridic persons should not be allowed to be members of the cooperative because they are profit-driven is also not valid, as the profit objective only applies to stock companies. It should also be kept in mind that profit orientation is not a contradiction to membership in a cooperative that trades with both members and non-members. In the agricultural sector, there are already many that have juridic persons as members of the cooperative. Many schools use buying cooperatives to benefit from scarce services and benefits through the cooperative. The exclusion of juridic persons from membership to cooperative will prevent small-scale farmers that have trust to become part of the cooperative and will also prevent membership by schools to cooperatives. We do have cooperatives where some of the cooperatives and members are schools, or in some instances are NGO or community organizations who are joining cooperatives. So in a sense, we are saying that those juridic persons could not therefore be part and parcel of cooperatives, which we are of the opinion that will be a contradiction in terms, and it will be disallowing people their freedom of association and the right to associate freely, which at the moment, as I mentioned in the subcommittee, we are represented as a department by the agricultural commercial cooperatives who have mixed membership, both juristic and natural. That if this is not allowed, you know, that might find itself in the constitutional court matters. So this, our view is that we should allow both juristic persons and natural persons to partake within the cooperative. I thank you on that issue. Chairperson, could I continue on the next item? Proxy. Pretoria Trust raised this issue on proxy. In conflict with Section 14, Subsection 2B of the Act, that makes provision for members to appoint a proxy to attend and vote at a general meeting on that member's behalf or for postal vote, provided that no person may act as a proxy for more than 20% of members entitled to vote at a meeting or for such lesser percentage of members placed in the constitution of the cooperative. So the issue there is that there was a challenge on what was put on the bill. So our view there is that we support the recommendation to delete the provision in Section 14, Subsection 2D of the Principal Act and to retain the maximum of 5% of the social membership of the cooperative. This is to ensure the cooperative principle of democratic member control is not undermined. So in a sense, there we are allowing that only 5% of the could be allowable as proxy within the total membership could be allowable as proxy. That is the amendment. So we are maintaining that particular view. And that view also was agreed at NELEC by all the constituents, both the business, labor, as well as...
Sorry, Mr. No, someone is raising an issue. All right, also the chairperson of the committee is back. The powers of this bank where it belongs. So Mr. Mabasa, but as the chairperson, to go.
I just thought it's proper that FSR committee will indicate the sequence, because part of the report that we gave is a result of the discussion and amending of what the department is presenting now. So that in terms of sequence, this is what should have come first. Yes, what the Dumo is reporting should have come first. And then the report of the subcommittee should have come later. As I spoke. But when the advocate and other members of the subcommittee speak, they will be speaking at the right stage, because they will be speaking after Mr. Ndumo. So I just thought that the sequence must not be confusing. For an example, if you speak of process, you may find that I imply that as a subcommittee we have more or less agreed, but that will be but that will contradict what Mr. Ndumo is saying. Whereas Mr. Ndumo has moved from what he's reporting now, he is now at the subcommittee level.
I'm presenting, Chairperson, I'm presenting the matter originally as our view. But I'm not going ahead to present the agreement that we've entered into. So we leave that to the later stage. Okay. The next item, Chairperson, is the withdrawal of membership, which touches on page 10, line 35 of the amendment bill itself. We received comments from the two cooperatives. They were commenting on the issue of this withdrawal of membership shares. Their issue is this: 2-year period, for them, they are arguing that it is too short. And in their view, they are of the opinion that it may adversely affect the financial position of the cooperative. And in that regard, they are therefore proposing that the period for repayment of shares should be determined in the constitution of the corporate, alternatively that the period should be increased to 5 years. So we are taking the view that says that the DTI takes on board the concern raised and recommend that the constitution of the cooperative should stipulate the maximum period in which membership shares should be repaid if a cooperative determines that the repayment of membership within the normal repayment period stipulated in its constitution would adversely affect its financial well-being. So what we are saying is that this matter, in our view, to address the concern, should be left to the constitution of the cooperative. Let the cooperative determine this in their constitution. That is the position that we adopted in that regard. And then on the cooperative development agency, we had further raised an issue, which is in page 23, line 20 of the bill. Their issue is the duplication of the agency, the one that we're developing with the agents like CEDA and CIFA, and the role of municipalities. The aim for us, we are of the view that is not to duplicate, but to align and complement existing support agencies. Section 91A, subsection 3, provides that after consultation with the relevant authorities, the agency may establish circular branches in every province, metropolitan municipality, and district municipality in accordance with this chapter. It is envisioned that co-location will also be utilized as a strategy and also streamlining of cooperative support throughout the country. The agency will support municipalities in the achievement of their development goals. And they also, we did mention there that the agency now is going to be an agency that is not going to be like Chapter 3, but it will be a government component. And then in that regard, as a government component, it will be easy for it to work very much in tandem with municipalities, because it will be governmentally driven and governmentally managed, not like Chapter 3 institutions which are managed by boards, but it will have a head, and then it will be easy to liaise municipalities and also other particular agencies. And then in the infrastructure cost, we are saying that we will co-locate within the existing agencies in that particular regard, so that there are no costs there. But we do want to see streamlining of support for cooperatives within the agency itself. On the tribunal, it's page 26 there, line 36. The three organizations raised the concern there, SAUDA, SENACO, and NAPCOSA. The concern they raised is that they were opposed to the establishment of the tribunal. Will it be able to serve rural areas? And they were opposed in this way, primarily not in principle against the tribunal, but they were more in favor of that the money, or what you call the funds, should be like the SENACO, should rather be utilized in the agency for training rather than the issue of the tribunal itself. So as a principle, there was no objection to the establishment of the tribunal as an institution. It was more about resources, and then also about to what extent will it be able to reach out to those flung areas of South Africa. So our view there is that the establishment is imperative to ensure good governance. The tribunal will be instrumental in dealing with issues of conflict resolution, judicial management, winding up and deregistration and liquidation, assisting in that regard. And the tribunal will be mobile and will be able to serve all provinces and rural areas accordingly. So that is the view that we put forward in that regard. On the next item, which is worker cooperative, page 36, line 16, NUMS and SAC 2 raise the concern there. To avoid the circumvention of labor legislation and the formation of bogus cooperatives, they recommended the deletion of the word applicable, which is the applicable labor legislation. That's what we said in the bill. So that is in item 6, subsection 3 of part 2. We are concurring with them that we don't mind, and we will agree with them to remove the word applicable from the sentence, and then also just write it in this manner: all worker cooperatives must comply with labor legislation. So that if they think it will create doubt, though we are not of the view that it should have created a doubt, but we are allowing that so that we should get agreement in that regard. So we have agreed with that particular concern. On the cooperative principles, page 14, line 1, and page 39, line 36, comments that were raised by NUMSA and SACTAO strengthen the provisions of the Cooperative Act through the issue of the 7 cooperative principles. The bill recommends the amendment of the preamble to include the 7 cooperative principles. These principles will put them in the preamble of the bill. And then the bill also refers to the alignment of the bill with the ILO Recommendation 193 of 2002, which was ratified by the South African government. So those are the issues, Chairperson, which concludes my the issues that we have to address at DTI, and I'd like to thank Chairperson and also the Honourable Member. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think I'll just go up there now in front. And I want to thank with the room, it'd be better if I stay here then. Thank you very much. I just want to check with the whip if they were at this point the need for clarification, or have you had that already?
No, I think that Jennifer was out to come in
engage after that. All right. Advocate and the Mirva, if you can adjust to this back part. So we're not addressing the issue of the division of bills as I talk to you. Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. This is just a quick comment based on what DGI said. I think on most of the issues, we in general agree. I think there were very good comments from the public, and both of those comments can be taken on board, and DGI has agreed to do so. So what I've done is I've taken their slides, and I simply inserted small comments where I found the comments might be necessary. So the purpose is simply to advise the portfolio committee on aspects where I either differ or where I'm proposing an alternative or an additional amendment. In this specific operative principle, just a minute, has everyone got that copy, which was, I think, given out last week, wasn't it, or was it given out last week? But for those who do have it, it's black. It's a black box, as you can see, wherever. At least we can share, but it was given out last week, all right?
Thank you, Chair. In essence of the cooperative principles, as was also indicated in the subcommittee report, my recommendation is that these principles appear to me to be so important that they should actually be made something that is part of the body of the bill and not just stated in the preamble. And I would recommend that these somewhere in the bill indicate that cooperatives should actually comply with this. We simply state in Section C that they are deemed to comply with cooperative principles if they do certain things. But you don't say that they must comply. So that is something that must be done. But also in the subcommittee meeting, DGI agreed that they weren't aware if it's in the preamble, it is not binding, and therefore they agreed it must be somewhere. And they were proposing that we put it in the definition, that we define cooperative principles, and then the Act will simply state that there is a responsibility to comply. In respect of the annual accounting report, the financial statements, the social report, and the management decision report, I simply indicated, as DGI has undertaken already, they agree the three must be separately defined. I've also said, in addition, I would recommend that we clearly state who the author of each report is, specifically because your social and your management decision reports are actually new reports to the whole accounting system of all cooperatives. So that is then taking us actually onto the next slide, which deals with the social report and the management decision report. And also what is very important on these, I think this was also mentioned by one of the members last week, is that it is fine for us to comment on these now, but we need to see the final wording as it goes into the bill and then interrogate that. So that is just to keep in mind. We still have to have the final wording to look at. In respect of the aspect of the framework, now the Act provides that the minister must by notice publish this framework. And I'm of the opinion I would prefer this to be in regulation. Now, we can word it in such a way and see if we can get away with it so that the section that deals with the reporting framework is also dealt with in that section so that we don't have to do an additional change. But if it can't be done, then I would recommend that we make an additional change, which will require our permission to do, to Section 95, which is the section in the Act that deals with regulations. There are also some other aspects that might come up as we go through the bill. And I think on two or three occasions I'm going to recommend that that section be changed. So it might be necessary, depending on how the committee feels about that recommendation, it might be necessary to do anyway. And if that is the case, then it's very easy just to incorporate it into that section and set a minister may make regulations in respect of the accounting framework. On the next aspect, definition for audit, The audit decision, my recommendation was that we just, again, relook at the wording, just refine your wording, and specifically on audit, that we include your social report and your management decision report, because the ADA decision does not include that. So that is simply my comment there, but I think that UTI has already taken on board. Definition for the auditor's annual accounting report, again, there was the problem of the social and the management decision report, and my comment is again, I think this framework, the reporting system framework, is very important because it can resolve a lot of these issues. But it is very important that it is properly provided for in the book. On the definition for independent reviewer, this is simply a stylistic, the definition of independent reviewer, the comment from DI was that if we look at the Companies Act, there's provision in the regulations for what is an independent reviewer. And my comment is simply that I would prefer that to be in the bill and not in the regulations. So that your regulations rather speak to your bill and not the other way around. And then also independent reviewers report, this is again one of the aspects brought forward by the accounting profession, and that proposed that the independent reviewer annual accounting report changed, and DTI is proposing an independent reviewed report. And I was going to be saying, you know, maybe a stylistic issue, we can also call it the independent reviewer report, because that's the report that we're talking of, but that is not a big comment. This is the next issue is on clause 3 and the fact that there are conflicting sections. This was not on the slide presented by the DGI, but it was one of the public comments that I thought was quite important because it is a conflict in the bill. And what we have is it deals with I just want to get the bill. Clause 3, Section 3 is the one that deals with proxies. And what you have is that the way that it's worded, you have in Section 3, there is where there's up to a certain number of members. There can be 40 or 50 or 25% voting rather. If you read Section 4, it's quite clear that it shall never be more than 15. So there's clearly a contradiction there, and that is just something that must be corrected. And I don't think DTI had a problem with that. I just thought to point that out, that we need to just make sure that there is no conflicting sessions in the bill. The next aspect is also something that was not in the slides of DTI, but I thought that was an important comment made by the public. The DTI indicates that regulations will indicate what corporate governance requirements must be complied with. But I am proposing that, well, first of all, we must maybe have a look and see whether corporate governance should not be defined. I think that is another aspect that we might have to look at. But if there might be regulations for corporate governance, again, we need to look at the regulation section or either popping it into somewhere else in the Act that is currently being amended, but we need to make a vision for regulation, otherwise you can't have a regulation. The next aspect was also something that was not in the presentation, but it was, all of these are part of the written response, document B, that you received last week. So it's not as that, they highlighted when they started their presentation that they are only highlighting the ones that might be a little bit contentious or something like that. So the ones that I'm adding is simply because I feel these might also be contentious. In respect of that all cooperatives must have the word co-op and limited in their name, A comment was made by Solva about the administrative costs for current co-ops to change that. Because remember, this means changing your business cards, your letterheads, your sign posting, etc. So there's quite a number of costs involved in that. And DTI's response was that the co-op abbreviation is only required from the Act's commencement, from the Amendments Act's commencement. The problem that I have is that limited is not included there. So if we want to say that it is all only going forward, once the Act has commenced, that the names must read like that, then we must just make a slight change to Section 10.2b as well, so that it reads the same as 10.2a reads, which says only from the commencement of this Act. The next issue is on comments from Erba regarding projected revenue. What DTI has indicated, you will remember that when we look at the categories of cooperatives, the DTI will prescribe the projected revenue or the actual revenue, and from those costs, it will be either an A or a B or a C. Now, the comment was made that but projected revenue is a bit of a vague term. Where do we come from? And DTI indicated that that is only newly established cooperatives. So my proposal is that you then define it such in the book, that it's quite clear when projected revenue is applicable. The next one is a very, very short one. It was just one of the public comments was, what is an activity plan? And DTI indicated actually that in their written response, they indicated what is an activity plan. It is a business plan. It is similar to a business plan. It summarizes operational financial objectives, set clear business goals, and so on. My recommendation is again just, well, then let's define it in the bill. So that when a cooperative reads activity plans, they can go and look and see exactly what it is. Then, in respect of individual reserves, what I would propose here is because there was a request for indivisible reserves to be not limited to only reserves for emergencies that can also be used for other aspects. And my proposal is, and DTI agrees with that, so they've proposed an amendment so that you have different kinds of reserves, but my proposal would just be that the co-op must in its constitution identify the types of reserves that they would want to have. So that we don't start a co-op saying we have a reserve for improvement and expansion of the co-op, and when we get to expansion, someone else says, no, that reserve, I understood it's going to be for something else. So the next phase is exactly the same. To say that you must clearly say that there's more than one, and then what it is about. And in terms of exemptions, DTI indicated that small co-ops will definitely be exempted from audits, from reviews. And this is something that will actually be very clear from the regulations, because the regulations will talk to ABC, and they will say when and what they must submit. But I would recommend that we maybe make that clear in the bill already. If we are exempting, that we make it clear in the bill that certain parties are exempted. So that there's no confusion about that. On this one, the DTI actually also agreed. What we have here is that the accounting firm has expressed a concern about the independent review and the audit and the right for AGM to adopt or reject. And DTI has already said that they will look at this wording and say it will be very clear, because I think there must be no confusion what the AGM can or can't do, especially given that we are working here with different levels of cooperatives. We might have a very new cooperatives, people kind of from second economy, doesn't know business. We need to be very clear for them specifically. I think your bigger co-ops, your agricultural co-ops, will probably know exactly what they can and can't do. One of the last ones I think is, it is just simply a wording. In the bill, it's on page 15, line 25, that speaks to the accounting profession say, but there is no such thing as a conflict of interest in terms of accounting practice. Now, if you look at it as a bill, it says it is section 49B, auditor or independent review of operators in any circumstances that are considered to constitute a conflict of interest in terms of accounting practice. So my comment is simply, if the accounting bodies are telling us that they don't have accounting practice, that term, accounting practice, that indicates a conflict of interest, perhaps we should then change that term to reflect something else. Now, they have given us the example, and the problem is what DCI has indicated is, but there are seven professional bodies. You can't list each one's code of conduct. But what I'm recommending is that perhaps we combine and we simply work on the wording, and so, you know, that is something that still can be worked on. But instead of saying in terms of accounting practice, we can perhaps say the codes of professional conduct applicable to the auditor or the independent reviewer in his profession or something like that. I think it's wording that can be tweaked at. But I just felt that it's important that if a profession is telling us they don't know a term, that we listen. Otherwise, we might have to feel that it's something that the day say has no meaning to them. Something else that is quite important is the bill is not clear on whether an auditor or an independent reviewer, that appointment, must actually be registered with CIPC. Now, if you look, if you want to look at the bill, it's again on page 15, and from 939 onwards, we'll be talking about appointments and so on of the auditor or independent reviewer. The problem is that in Section 3, a fine can be imposed if this person is not appointed. Now, the problem is a bill should never have sanctions that you can't enforce. And if there's no registration, how will CIPC know to impose a fine? So I don't know what, you know, DCI might have a different view. There might be, this might be something that will be registered automatically when the financials are submitted. They will see that there is someone, and that is when they have envisaged it. And then the committee can say, well, that is fine. That's sufficient information for CIPC to be able to issue the fine. But it's simply something I thought we must think about to make sure that we don't put something there and CIPC says, but I can't issue a fine if I don't have the information. I think the next part is something that DCI has already indicated that they are in agreement with in respect of the irregularities. Now, the bill as it is at the moment was indicating that the irregularities must be reported to the board. And the accounting body indicated, no, this must go directly to CIPC. And DCI agreed with that. But what I would just propose is that DCI saying that the framework is very close. At the time when I drafted the presentation, I proposed that we just get the inputs from these accounting bodies on the social and management report and whether every on those reports can be reported to CIPC. But if the framework is very close to finalization, and I know there's also a request in the subcommittee that this committee provided with the skeleton of that framework, I think that is something that could help a lot. Because then we know what we're talking about when we're talking about accounting and where we are and how it's going to look. So instead of maybe asking ICAS and SAPAS and Erebus input, we can simply look at that framework and see if the framework provides for these reports to be or errors on those reports to be reported. And those are the comments that I've added. I don't think that there's a lot of difference between DCI and myself. I think there's very tiny technical detail in that part. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think there's
we move through the facilitation of the whip who chairs the first half of the meeting. We move with some feed, and that's always very helpful to us. Thank you very much, Aloha Debbie, for doing that. And we now have both the DTI's response to the information, the comments made by our, and the analysis by the parliamentary legal person advocate, Charlene van der Merwe. Now, there seem to be many areas that there is absolutely no difference of opinion on what the advocate has put forward. So in the very first instance, we're going to get DDI doing a complete agreement on what there is no agreement of, that is Advocate van der Merwe. We've heard what Advocate van der Merwe has had to say, and now if we can come to DTI and look at page 2, do you agree, do you agree, do you agree? So we can just write, or, you know, effectively use this as a status report to move forward on. Are we all agreed there, Commissioner Ndumo? Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
So you're just going to take page 1, you don't have to expand. It's agreed. Only when it's disagreed do you give your reason. I hope I'm clear there.
Yeah. We start with page 2. We are in agreement there. That is, yeah. Yes, right.
That's all. Page 3.
We have agreed as well on the page, on the definition on annual accounting report. Also, the annual accounting report, you are in agreement with that one. That we are also in agreement on the Section 95, that is the annual accounting report as well, which continues. Audit. Yeah, we are in agreement with that one as well. The only issue that we have emphasized is the social and management decision report there. That must be included. And then on the divisional audit and annual accounting report, we are also in agreement with that one, Chair. Independent reviewer, also we are in agreement with that. That we can provide that definition in the bill itself. It continues as well, the same thing, we in agreement. Yes, the reporting. Yeah, we are in agreement with the independent review. And then we are in this conflicting section. Let me go down to this. All right, with that one, clause 3, section 3, 4, and 3, 5, we are in agreement, Chair. Corporate governance, we're in agreement that we will, this we will provide them in the regulation, but we will provide a clause that allows that regulation to be drafted in the bill.
I'm one, you can reserve your right, you know. But if you're happy to move on, you move on, yes.
Yeah, Chair, I've consulted that. We're in agreement as well with that one as well. Yes. Yeah. Could you allow us, Chair, that you just elaborate on this one, because there might be some few issues, just if you could entertain. Yeah.
Right. Are we talking about the fact on Uber, the comment saying there that the regulations flow out of the Act? Is that the one?
No, the one about the administrative cost. We just want to put on record there is no administrative cost to those things, because we don't believe that to be the case, because this includes corporations that are going to come after the bill. You can speak that.
Chair, from the technical part, let me just assist in this regard. All operating the carries the name co-op limited. We are just correcting to make it more legal, to put it more legally, so that it be legally mentioned. There's no cost involved in this regard.
Uber raises under the impression after studying the Act that there were costs, and you're actually saying there are no admin costs at all. I hope we're very clear about that.
Just, we don't agree with them there on that underscore, Chair. We just have to put it very clear. Yeah. Yeah. The other one is the one on revenue. On the definition, we agree that we will provide both the definition for actual and the projected revenue in terms of those categorizations. We agree with that. And then on the issue of activity plan, yes, indeed, we will define that one very clearly. We agree with that. And then on the indivisible reserve, I think we've already reached an agreement on that one, so we are just in agreement there. It also continues, so we are in agreement as well with that aspect. And then on the issue of exempt, yes, we would have preferred, though I must mention that we want all of these issues, because they might change from time to time, to be in the regulation rather than to be in the bill. What we wanted it to do is just to enable us to put it in there, to give us the right to put it in, but the actual issue is expressed very explicitly in terms of categorizing them, who are these that are exempted. We base that on the regulation so that it allows the minister quick amendment if he wants to do that, if they are changing in the future. Yes, that is page 14, line 4 to 14 of the bill. Yeah, of the bill there. Let's proceed. I think we are in agreement with the independent review report. Yeah, on the issue of the practice, we are taking the recommendation on board to reword according to suggestion. Right, so we are in agreement that. The one on the CIPC, yes, we agree with the CIPC that we will put the wording very clear there to ensure that the compliance and the registration does indeed take place within the CIPC of all those independent reviewers who are going to carry the work in that respect and auditors accordingly. Similarly, with the section 42, we are in agreement with that one as well. And then I think this concludes our issue. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can we just confirm that then, that the areas of difference of opinion, if you like, on clause 9, section 10.2b, page 7, lines 5 and 10. That's one. Okay. And then the other one, the next one would be clause 35, section 47, page 14. Okay. Just so that we're all on board. Okay. And then I don't think there was a difference of opinion on the what they call audit and independent review reports. You accepted that one, right? But then the next one, if I'm correct, is clause 37. Clause 37, where there's a difference of opinion. That is clause 37, section 49. Yeah, different affirmatively, yes. Okay. Now, that being the case, we do have just a few minutes before tea. Perhaps you can explain more clearly for us now so that members can note this. What is your basic disagreement then on clause 9, section 10, and then we'll get Advocate van der Merwe to respond. So we're talking about clause 9, section 10, where Advocate van der Merwe is referring to limited. What is the DTI position exactly?
Yes. The submission that was made by SAUGA was referring to the administrative cost for those cooperatives that are already registered and they've already accepted their names in terms of the Cooperatives Act 2005. That if we're now asking, making recommendation for them to comply with Co-op LTD, because that's what the suggestion is in the amendment bill, we are incurring the cost because we are now saying they must now do these changes that they must now adopt and then in compliance with the bill. What do I think? That law, the way it is captured, it gives them first an option that they can choose to do that if they deem that it would be necessary for them to do that. So it's not compelling them to do that. That's the first thing. And secondly, what it does, it only emphasizes compelling to all the cooperatives that will be registered under this new particular bill. So in that regard, there are no costs yet that are being alluded to by the That's why we have a difference of opinion with them in that particular regard. I hope it's clear, Shepard.
Thank you very much. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can refer the members to the bill, the second amendment bill, page 7, if we can look at clause 9. I understand what the DTI is saying, but I think they are missing the point on limited. If we read section clause 9, paragraph A, it reads, either substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2. A cooperative must have the word, paragraph A, cooperative or co-op as part of his name, and in respect of cooperative registered after commencement of cooperative amendment act, only the abbreviation co-op. Okay? So in respect of co-op, it's quite clear that it's only after commencement of this act. Let's look at paragraph B, and we need to start it as subsection 2 perhaps again. A cooperative must have the word, paragraph B now, limited, or the abbreviation LCD as the last word of its name, full stop. Now that may mean all cooperatives, before or after commencement of this act. So what I'm simply saying is that if it is the intention that it must be all, before and after, fine, then we must look at that cost implication that was the concern. But if it is intended that it must only be applicable after commencement of this act, then we must just make an amendment there so that it reads the same as paragraph A.
Members, comment? You've heard the two points of view very clearly spelled out. You've seen the legislation on page 7. Because in the end, we're trying to make progress here and move forward. So any comment from members? You've heard both points of view very clearly explained here.
Okay.
Yes, Honourable Hill.
It seems that Advocate Fanamada's point makes perfect sense in law, and that it would be a relatively standard technical amendment that needs to be made.
Table members. Honourable Balfour?
I agree with that. But if further amending it can clarify matters better, all the better.
So we have actually got the comment here from the advocate very clearly explaining that in fact it's possible that this misconception could occur and in fact that a cost could be incurred. The committee seems to be moving with the our own parliamentary legal advisor on this matter. Bearing in mind that the DTR wants to come back on it as we're moving further along and we begin to pass the bill clause by clause, you know, adopt each clause, you're welcome to. If you want a further look at it, you may come back at the next sitting with something else. But at this moment, members are agreeing with the advocate and not the DTI on this particular matter. All right, so we're going to move. It doesn't stop you from coming back at a later point, but rather just at this moment we want to make some progress. We then go to Clause 35, Section 47, to DTI, comments by IRBA and by IPA. It may be possible to exempt some such small co-op from an audit or review. And you see what the advocate here from Parliament, our legal advisor, has indicated that recommend that the definitions must indicate the author of each document, recommend that the bill clearly states. So we're looking more at clarity here. DTI?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. If I could come on that one, we're very much in favor of the exemption of a certain category of cooperatives, and we're also in favor of making sure that we do provide an enabling clause in that regard. What we are only suggesting is that the actual category of saying from what annual revenue to what particular, from what annual revenue, we leave that to the regulation, rather than we articulate it, because if we put it strictly in the bill to that threshold, our take is that it then seal it in the bill. We would like to have it in the regulation so that from time to time we can review it, whether we could allow the minister to review it from time to time and see whether it's still relevant, given the inflation and development in the economy, broadly speaking. That's the issue that we just want to raise.
I think members should be reminded that our committee meetings are not yet conducted on the social network. Of course, that time may come, but not right. Yes, Advocate Madam Merva, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on this one, DTI and I are not in disagreement. I'm not talking about the categories, the amounts being prescribed in the bill. When it is page 14 of the bill, clause 35, in line 4, it is indicated that category C cooperatives must produce an auditor's annual accounting report. That is subsection 1. Subsection 2 starts in line 9. Category B, primary cooperatives, must produce an independent reviewer's annual accounting report. Then subsection 3, starting in line 12, says category A, primary cooperative, must produce an annual accounting report to the registrar. Now the comment was that it is not clear enough that this annual accounting report is something that any person can draft for them. So essentially to put that a little bit clearer, so it's clear you don't have to have an auditor, you don't have to have an independent reviewer. From a legal point of view, to me, quite clear. But if the accounting profession feels a little bit uncertain about this,
I thought we can just put it a little bit clearer. That is not, I was not arguing for the category to be described in the bill. It was simply for the category A, who only had to produce an annual accounting report. That is very clear that this is something that the company, that the cooperatives themselves can draw.
So essentially then, as I said before, we're looking here at clarity, making it quite clear. There doesn't appear, but I'll come back to DTI, to be a substantive difference of opinion here. But rather, let's ensure there's clarity. Yes, Ms. Bindle-Moore, thank you.
Chair, I think we're agreeing with that. Yeah, I think there was some element of speaking parallel to each other there. We are in agreement. Yeah.
We are making some very constructive moves here, and it's very healthy, I think. We then go on to probably the last one, as I see, Clause 37, Section 49. A conflict of interest does not arise in terms of accounting practice, etc. We all got that one. There was no disagreement.
That's one we accepted. Oh,
you accepted that one, sorry. There was another one, though, I'm almost certain. Let's just see where it's hidden. What's the third one? Yes. Is that Clause 9, Section 10, the administrative costs? And we dealt with that.
Yeah, that's the one that we dealt with.
And we're now in agreement with the with Parliament itself.
Yes.
So as I see it then, and I hope I'm correct, there is not an agreement by the Department as well as our own parliamentary advisor. We ourselves have just engaged with one of the clauses. And so the document that we have before you here, what we want to propose to members now, ask members to do, looking at this, having heard this, we need to take a position which says how to go forward. And that would be, with this document, we would want DTI to implement what has been requested and what they've agreed with here. Okay, they have agreed verbally. Now we need action. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that's... We can only move with that. We also have to consider the report of the subcommittee, because there are also some recommendations which we must also pronounce on them.
Because you chaired that last, the first section on the Wakadeli, was there anything in conflict with this, anything different? About it?
Not entirely in conflict, but one of the elements was the tribunal, we must try to get more experiences of how other countries have executed it, which countries, those that have not used the tribunal, what mechanism did they use, just so that we take a very informed decision.
DTI then, yourself DTI, you could come forward with that. And we'd also ask from our own staff, having looked at that, to also add their own views, the content specialists, to look at what we get from DTI and see what more could be added. And that would then, you'd be able then to comment in a more informed manner, am I right, Honourable Mabasa, after getting the information.
Another one is room, where we said that there are still institutions. I believe that you have written, letters to the various institutions where we were saying we should ask them to make a submission, because our aim is not just to produce an act, but this act must also be bought by people who will implement it. And amongst those that are key, it is the economic departments of universities, technicals, you know, so that even as we move forward, we make room for, in case they come up with something which improves our bill.
Take it back in the subcommittee report. Because if it's in the subcommittee report, your manco will action it further on. All right. Now, having done that far here, we began to come to the end of that before we moved on to the next item. But just to say where we are, and what do we want and when do we want it? We clearly, on the DTI side, our next meeting is next week. And we would have wanted that back filed in so that we can make more progress. I'm also not aware if during my absence the issue of what we're doing about experts coming on board has been, if the committee had been informed. Now, if it has not been informed, the decision from Manco is that given that Dr. Maima, whom we wanted to come here, is not available because he's going to be at the United Nations, addressing the United Nations on co-op, that we would be getting from him some help. We are writing this regard in a written manner, or asking him when else can he come. So that's the matter that has been decided there. With respect to Ms. Idemson, is that right, Cathy? We have had to go an alternate route. Parliament prefers us to come up with three quotes, three names. It's not always easy to come up with three names in areas that in which South Africa is newly proceeding. You know, it's an exploratory area with so many academics. So we've now adopted a default route, which means that we can request that this particular person come. And we have been requested not to pursue this too frequently, as it can create wrong perception by the Auditor General that we always ask for one person and the one person comes. It should not develop into a practice. I think that's what administration sees. So on this occasion, we have now communicated with Ms. Idemson, and we are getting the finance available, and that will be forthcoming. With respect to the BAF people, we are still pursuing that. It seems it's been more difficult to identify someone there than we thought possible. But I think from our side, we would want this decision to be taken on the administration side with their research to come forward with some names to us, certainly by Friday or at the latest Tuesday morning to the Manco committee, because we can't go on and on in that manner. I think looking at the work, I think we've addressed everything with respect to the co-op up to this particular point. Is that correct? On the substantive issues. After tea, we'll be coming back to the, after tea, the briefing by Advocate van der Merwe with respect to the tagging. Because as you know, this is now, we were informed that this is no longer two bills, it's been tagged separately, and the decision was to have one piece of legislation amending the same thing and not two different pieces amending the same law. So I think the tea is ready. Can we just take a 10-minute tea break, a very brief one, and come back to a very important aspect? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. What was it out?
All right. Members, you will recall that the last time that we did deliberate on the NCC, we didn't have all the documents. You will recall that. And so when we look at this, we look at A, which is the longest one. That is what the committee between the ANC and the DA and the ANC put together and reflect to the position then. Alright, then if you move to B, where is my D? And if you move to B, the difference between between A and B in terms of look is that B has got a little A and a little B on it. Do you see that? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, A and B. That is B. And then there is a proposal put together here, a crossed one, which we're calling C, which is only 1 and 2. It is the very shortest you've got. Okay. Now, on A, we reached a position last week indicating what our position was. It's not that perhaps anything, our substantive position has changed or principal position. It just means that B, and we need to look at B, the committee secretary addressed the issue of those documents that had arrived. So, for example, in B, where one is, you'll see here, talks about the form and content of documents submitted by the ANZ for the committee's consideration. Two, by the NCZ. And well, ANZ's on our brain. two, the quality of reports submitted to the committee by the NCZ. That sounds very similar to the top, number one. Three, the quality of compliance notices issued and legal assessments provided by the NCC. Four, the failure of the NCC to provide the necessary information as requested with respect to the following. A copy of the letter from the Auditor General, which was offered to the committee by the Commissioner, and which indicates that the NCC has received an unqualified audit. B, a report from the NCC on the status of cases before it, the decisions taken to date, and the National Consumer Tribunal's judgment against the NCC. And then finally, the committee wishes to reiterate the need to preserve the integrity. It's the integrity of the AG, and on the other hand, we need an NCC. We wish to retain the that the mandate of the NCC should be respected and implemented. So it's not quite the integrity per se, the integrity applies to the AG. Furthermore, the committee wishes to request that the Department of Trade and Industry assesses the inconsistencies within the Consumer Act and give that particular one. That to me is the one clear one, the last paragraph. It's in every one of them, and I think that we don't have a problem there. But where we do have a problem, I'm not aware that we've received the staffing profile. Has that arrived? Okay, it does address it. We ask for the racial breakdown specifically, as well as the gender breakdown. So it doesn't address it. The financial statement, we've got that. The report from the NCC, we don't on the cases. I'm going backwards on A. The quality of compliance notices, etc. And now what I'm going to do with you members is to take the last one, that is C, and I want you to compare C against B, because B is what has arrived. It's on the basis of information before us. So I'm going to go backwards here because it's the easier way in this instance. If you look at the last paragraph, there's no, it agrees on both sides. You see the last paragraph reflecting the legislation, no problem. Then you go to number four on B. The following, the failure of the NCC to provide the necessary information as requested with respect to the following. A copy of a letter which had been offered, and B, a report from the NCC on the status. You can see that we've got that in both. Then you gain the quality of compliance notices, which you have in both, and the quality of reports. I have only one comment to make here with respect to B and C. It concerns the quality of compliance notices. I think we made a very clear statement here. It wasn't just quality, it was actually the processes and procedures. Because compliance notice you have to follow a particular process and procedure. The quality, we must get more specific, and that is all I would say. So members, C is crafted by the committee secretary, B is essentially what the committee said. So over to you as to what you want to adopt here, what the C says, if you'd like that read out, express a serious concern, and one, the quality, form, and content of the documents submitted by the SEC for the committee's consideration, the quality of compliance notices issued, and legal assessment provided. It doesn't go into the detail. I think the B is, for me, far more specific, apart from the compliance notices. So we have some comments then on B. This way, do you want us to comment on compliance notices? I don't see a hand objecting, so there's an objection, or not, Honourable Kobasa.
May I take a slightly different view and suggest that we defer this item to next week, so that we have further preparation on it and take a decision next week. Thank you.
We need to have an adjournment, not a deferment, because the matter we are all familiar with now. We have until the end of this month, which is Friday. We can call another meeting Friday. I don't think we're going to. We've had this matter before us for some time, and the only issue before the committee is this. We looked at this with respect to the financial obligations according to the mandate and the substantive obligations. That means in respect of the consumer protection, and how do you ensure that consumers are protected, but also at the same time business and industry are given a fair opportunity to comment, so that if they are not complying, do they have a fair opportunity? And I'm going to go over these again, that's why I'm not accepting it, because some of these things are not new. The legislation is something we must do. Nobody would disagree on that one, because it's something that was left out. One, the quality, form, and content of the documents. If members feel that the quality, form, and content of the documents you got were signed, we can agree on that. The quality of compliance notices and legal assessments. We've had this now for more than 3 weeks. So we need to move on it. Then we're asking them, not the commissioner, the NCC, to submit other things. We're asking the commission to submit the balance of the documents, because we don't have to rely on the commissioner to submit these documents. There is a deputy commissioner there. And, you know, it doesn't stop when one person is either medically unavailable or for one reason or another is not at their post. The commission remains. And I think if we start delaying reports of this nature, it becomes problematic, because it was a May June issue. It is now August. It's too long to delay. Honourable Khadebe?
Comrade Chairperson, I understand the sense that this was a long overdue report. But I think that it was very unfortunate that the Commission didn't come to that Friday meeting. To that Friday meeting where the Commissioner provided an apology. You are correct that the NCC is not equal to the Commissioner, whereby it means that the Deputy Commissioner can be called in and submit a report. I think that these issues which are far-reaching, I think that it would be fair that we give the Commission another chance to come and present within the committee, so that they don't only submit the report, they will come and present so that we interact with them. I think then it would be safe, because I recall that in the last meeting we're in, I also made a request on the side of the department that, looking at the fact that they requested
the tribunal, certain information from the tribunal. What did they do with that information? I think that we must have a comprehensive picture. Because really, I don't think that we in the position with half information. There's nothing wrong with foreign waiting for 3 weeks. Why not invite them in to come and present in totality? Because some of these things are not going to be best when interacted through the electronic, but it would be better when it's a question and answer method so that we can be able to go further on the report. So that's why I compare with the Honourable Babas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kelly. Are there any other comments? Honourable Hill Lewis?
So I'm not sure that we need to have the NCC be allowed another opportunity to come and interact with this committee. I mean, it's true that they did miss one meeting, and hence apologies for that, but all in all, we've had several, at least 3 meetings with them that I can remember, maybe even before. And these items are still outstanding. I mean, they're really straightforward items that someone can send in a matter of hours, not a matter of months or weeks. I'm not sure we should offer them any further patience.
I think if the matter that we are dealing with is a relatively delicate, intricate matter, I tend to think, I know you know that we have lost time on this matter. I know what Member Hill Lewis is expressing, but I would think let's be patient again. We have already lost too much time, especially with apologies in advance by the Commissioner. If we invest another week, we will not regret so that we are thorough in our decision.
Is that a hand on Walmart
James? Just to say, Chair, that it's not a rocket science to comply with an administrative request. We're asking simply for 2 documents. And having a meeting or not having a meeting is quite irrelevant. It's a request for a document. And it's otherwise, and I think it's unacceptable. So I would like to say that I am sure that delaying this by another week, I don't think would add any value at all. And so I think that the failure to meet the administrative request is something that should be the basis of the decision we should take now.
Where I have a problem, members, and I'm going to make this clear. Last week, we took a decision in the committee. The decision we took is on document B, I think it is. Okay. The decision. And that decision was contributed to by the ANC almost in full. And 1 or 2 words changed. That was adopted then of the quorum. The proviso was that should we get the documents this week, we would then revise our position. So in other words, if we get the financial statement, it's not going to be in this because we've now got them. And we indicated to the Consumer Commission that we wanted those on Friday. And we followed up on Monday. And I think if we take this route, we are going to pave the way and create a precedent. When Parliament asks for documents from May, June, technically a 3-month period, but if you take constituency into account, a 2-month period. Notwithstanding that if the Commission requested to hold a meeting during our constituency. And I think that when we set ourselves up in this manner, it becomes highly problematic because we had every document here in front of us that has been problematic. Not one has not been problematic. The quality, form, and content. We have requested since June and May the status. How many more months and weeks must the NCC have to give us the status of their reports? I don't think another week myself. When you look at the quality of compliance notices, we're looking at processes, and that's where I said I had a problem with that statement there, because it's a process, it's a procedure that was at fault per se. When you come to the staffing documents, these documents were offered to us. We never received them. We didn't ask for some of them. The Auditor General's letter we didn't ask for because we didn't know it had even been given to the Commissioner. But it was offered to us. So one has a problem when something is simply offered, we didn't request it even, it still doesn't arrive. And as for saying the Commissioner apologized in advance, I think apologizing day before is not in advance that much, especially after a 3-week request. So I think if members want to go that route, as Chair, I'll have to accept it because I can't make a ruling in the face of the majority of membership disagreeing. I'd have to go with the agreement of the majority, because effectively your ruling won't hold, and that's the fact. So, but I'm putting that quite clear on the table that never before in my experience since 94 have I come across such a position. Never. And I think that that is the first way to a lack of service delivery. I really do, and I want the statement clear and loud, because it's wrong. Well, I didn't mean that, thank you, because I'm not holding a rally. So what I want clear, it is not a position I agree with, but I will accept the majority of the position here on board, but I don't agree with it. Thank you. Honourable Sebe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. You know, I'm an African boy. There's one adage which the people view, the South Africans in particular, where they say, the puta, liga booty. Sometimes, what it simply means is that, sometimes when I don't take a decision which is going to have far-reaching consequences, you must not rush. If you can provide time for extra, do it. So, that is critically changed. I think that I'm happy that you think that you are going to follow a majority rule, that please let's defer this thing to the next week, and then, if necessary, let's just communicate. Because today, last week, I remember that when this thing was pushed, it was Honorable Supervisor. It was me who seconded it. We thought that by this week we will be having a different situation altogether. But it feels that the situation has not yet changed. Let's give it another try. It's nothing wrong. We will think that for another 7 days. And then we'll look at it again. So that when a person, when you take that decision, you must be able to have a clear conscience that you didn't rush them. You did give everyone a chance whatever. Because as you said that you are correct, if the National Commissioner could not provide that, there's a Deputy Commissioner. Let Commission be the one which must respond to this thing. Let us not put this thing around an individual. Let's put it to the Commission, because the Commission is bigger than any individual. The Commission will go, but the Commission is going to remain. So what we're going to do, how we deal with it, in taking forward, is going to matter a lot. So that's why I said another 7 days, Chairperson, will not make that huge difference.
Honourable Hill-Lewis?
Chair, on 2 points. Firstly, I really don't see that there's any basis to delay it any further. I want to reiterate that point. We've asked for two simple documents and for 2 months have failed to provide them. There really isn't room for any further patience in that regard. The second point is I wonder whether there's scope to add in another line to suggest an amendment to this position on another point. And that is to say that in addition to these points listed here, the committee wishes to express a serious concern regarding the attitude taken by the NCC towards parliamentary oversight and accountability.
I have a problem with attitude. It's such an objective word. I'm not sure which attitude we may be referring to in final analysis. So it's a word I personally avoid unless I'm dealing with a recalcitrant teller who doesn't want to move on with the service. Then I might develop an attitude myself. But I don't think it's useful in a Parliament tree thing. But that's my view there.
Yeah, the word attitude is interchangeable with several others.
Yeah, okay. What I need to do is three things. One, I want a timeline, because we've given two deadlines as a committee. And you are saying, it's okay, let's give a third deadline. I want to hear someone on the bench who's telling me they want a third revised deadline. And how strong is that deadline going to be? I want a proposal on the deadline. Mabasa?
Okay. If we could request that we receive any outstanding information that we might need by Monday morning, the latest, and then we get back to this issue on Wednesday. That would be my first proposal.
Is that going to be a deadline we accept? I want to see from everyone sitting here, if you have an objection to that deadline, please let me know. If you have no objections, that is a deadline. Monday morning, is that, or Monday afternoon, I wasn't too clear, midday, coming from Barter.
Chair, let's just say by Monday, end of business.
So, by Monday, we want to receive, if there's the deadline for all the documents. I don't think there's any anything else you need to add, Honourable Hill Lewis, because the deadline is clear. I have already commented on that. I have already commented. So you don't want a deadline. Well, if you don't want a deadline, then you're out of the running, as it were. We want the information, and there's a deadline.
Out of the running, Chair, we had a deadline. It was ignored. This position is fine. We go forward as fine. We don't need a new deadline.
All right. I hear what you're saying now, that you want to stick to the current deadline. The AFD is proposing a fresh deadline. Okay. So can we have a formal proposal seconded in the view of the fact that somebody will take a different view? All right. It's proposed by Honourable Kwabasa. I think I'm correct. Seconded by?
Committee, I second the motion of Commissioner Kwabasa.
Seconded, are there any objections? Yeah, can we have that on record, please?
Is that the objection of my colleague enough?
The deadline. In that case, members, we will ask Mr. Herman to invite the Deputy Commissioner, along with the NCC, to come before the committee next Wednesday with all of the outstanding documentation. Am I correct? All of it. And that the deadline for the response to that will be Monday, close of business. All right. Now, on that basis, I think the forms that go forward will not be, will only be the first one that went forward last Friday. Was it Friday? Yes. And last Friday that was A. So the document you need to keep is A, because that we haven't taken a decision on the other two documents. And then when we come to the next meeting, we'll take it forward from there. So please get that letter out today before 2:30. Requesting this. I may indicate to members that the emails of the NCC are not working, but we are doing our best to get information to them. So what proposal do you have of getting this information to them? You'll go through DTI and what else?
We normally work through DTI, and we also can send a proposal letter via rigid letter to the
I think we ought to use one of these express, what do you call them, these postal, which we've never done before, but a lot of things are new now, and send that to be received by hand and given to the right person, and if we can get an acknowledgement of that, by Friday morning, because last week they didn't receive any documents. Remember? Fine. Okay. So we have finished that one there. Thank you very much, Mr. Herman. The only other thing is the tagging with respect to the co-op's amendment bills. That's been on the agenda for some time. It's last week. The committee needs to take a position on this. So we've asked Advocate Linda Merva just to brief us on the situation.
Thank you, Mandy. Honourable members, what I've done is I've done a short presentation for you on tagging. I think there might be a misunderstanding about what tagging actually is. Your slide, I do apologise, the index was not populated, but I have populated now. I will talk about why do we tag. Tagging by elimination, in other words, what process did we pick and how do we do it. And then I will look specifically at the Cooperative Act Amendment Bill. And then lastly, I will look at the involvement of provinces in the second amendment bill. Now, firstly, the question is, why do we tag? The Constitution provides four procedures in which bills can be processed. We find these in Section 74, 75, 76, and 77. They are procedures. What they deal with, these four sessions, they deal with the content of a bill that is prescribed. For instance, a money bill, they only deal with money bill matters, the same for constitutional amendment bill. If it's a constitutional amendment bill, these sections also provide for publication for public comment. It deals, all of these sections deal with procedures in the two houses, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, and 76 deals with mediation, if there is a problem, the same as 74. It also deals with input from provincial legislatures, in the case of 74, your constitutional amendment, and 76, your ordinary bills affecting provinces. These sections also deal with voting and with assent. So you can see what when we look at these processes, is why we tag, is to see if the bill fits into 74, there are certain things prescribed, and we can't go outside of that in our content of our bill. We must publish. We must follow a certain process. Voting works in a certain way. And the same goes for 75, which is your ordinary bills that do not affect provinces, the same for a 76, which is an ordinary bill that affects provinces, and the same for a 77, which is a money bill. Now, when we look at tagging and deciding which process do we recommend this bill follows, we start with Section 74. It's the easiest. Does this bill amend the Constitution? Now, that is a very, very easy question to answer. If we look at the Cooperative Amendment Bill, there's nothing in it that amends the Constitution, not even by implication. Then, if the answer is yes, then we have a Constitutional Amendment Bill and we will tag it as a Section 74 and add it to the process that it must follow. If the answer is no, then we look at the other easy one, which is 77. Is it a money bill? How do we know if it's a money bill? Does it appropriate money? Does it impose national taxes, levies, duties, surcharges? Or does it perhaps abolish or reduce or grant exemptions from national taxes, levies, duties, or surcharges? Or does it authorize direct charges against the National Revenue Fund? If it does, then it's a money bill, and there are certain procedures that only deal with that, with these appropriation or imposing or abolishing or authorizing direct charges. If it is not, if it does not deal with any of those, then we look at the next possible process, which is 76. Now, 76 has quite a number of bills that can fall under it. The first question that we ask is, does any of the sections of the bill deal with, or is reasonably necessary for, or incidental to a functional area in Schedule 4 of the Constitution? I've gone through Schedule 4, and I've sort of summarized what I'm of the opinion, usually with trade and industry matters, what could be applicable in Schedule 4. Consumer protection, cultural matters, gambling, industrial promotion, tourism, trade, trading regulations, urban development, rural development. So you look at this bill, and you will look at every single section, because it's a new case. We had a constitutional court case that said we no longer look at the short and the long title to make a decision on what a bill affects. We look at every single section by itself and see if any of those sections could affect the deal with or reason necessary for or incidental to. Now, if we look at the cooperative bills, the only possible thing that we're dealing with here in Schedule 4 is trade. But then, I will discuss that later. I'll get to that. Or let me maybe go there now. That this bill, or do the two bills deal with trade? Because if we look at the two bills, they both deal with cooperatives. The one sets up registration, and the other one sets up government bodies between the two spheres to deal with cooperatives. So they deal with cooperatives. That's what they deal with. Now, trade is a very difficult word. It can be very broad if you want to make it very broad. In fact, I understand in America that is how they got certain bills to have to go to the Senate. So what we thought when we look at trade is, what is the word? What does it mean? Where will it start affecting provinces? And it is when you start affecting the buying and selling of goods and services. That is our interpretation. So we took it as a very basic meaning of trade. And if we look at the cooperative bill, what do they deal with? Do they deal with what the cooperative will be buying and selling, the goods, the services? No. They deal with the entity that will be doing the trade. So they don't deal with the trade itself, but with the entity that will trade. So when we look at trade by elimination and we look at Schedule 4, we say no. We're thinking it does not deal with trade. Furthermore, if you look at the two bills, if we do decide it deals with trade, then both bills must be 76, because both deal then with trade, not just the one. Also, if I can give you some other examples, think of the Companies Act that has come through. That was also 75. But companies trade. The Act dealt with this entity and not with this trade. So that's how we looked at what to do and how to classify it. Now, once you have gone to Schedule 4 and you've seen that nothing there is applicable, like we've now said, are you possible with trade? And we say no, but it's not really buying and selling, it's definitely dealing with the entity itself. And entities aren't captured in Schedule 4. That's not what is captured there. Then you go to the next couple of tests in Section 76. And these are actually very specific legislation that is dealt with. Provincial authorities delegated to pass votes. There's already an act in that regard, and that's not what this one deals with. Municipal representation, public protector, public administration principles, policy appointments, public service commission, public service, Parliament intervention into a province in respect of national interest, security, etc., instead of setting national standards. No, that is not what this deals with. Financial and Fiscal Commission, no, that is not what it deals with. Legislation in Section Chapter 13, now Chapter 13 deals with budget, allocation of revenue, procurement, it also deals with the Financial and Fiscal Commission, the Central Bank, but it doesn't deal with any of those. But even so, if it does, then it must also affect the financial interests of a province. Over here, just keep in mind that the question is not if the bill affects the financial interests of a province. And if it does, then we look at something else. That's not the test that the Constitution gives to us. The test is, does it firstly deal with budget, allocation of revenue, procurement, things like that? And if it does, then only do we look at whether it affects the budget of a province. Because there's a number of bills, and I've heard the criticism a number of times, not just against province, but municipal, that there's unfunded budgets and mandates and things like that in a bill. But that is not what classifies the procedure. And I will come to what that does affect just now. The last aspect is the seat of Parliament. Now, if you have answered yes to any of these questions, it becomes a Section 76 bill, and there's a specific procedure. Once it's passed in the National Assembly, it will go to the National Council of Provinces. Every province will be voting as a province. They must give mandate in respect of how to vote, how to amend, etc. So there's a whole other process involved in the National Council of Provinces. If your answer is no, the only remaining section is section 75, which is ordinary bills not affecting the provinces. Now, like I said, if I look at the cooperative act, the amendment bills, they're not constitutional amendments. There's no money implications. When you look at 76, we could not say that it deals with trade. If we say these bills deal with trade, then in future, everyone that comes from trade industry will be a 76. I think that is simply the viewpoint. It's a decision that must be made. If we say this is trade, then everything that comes from that department must fall under Schedule 4. So if it is not Schedule 4, it must be Section 75. But now, this is where I'm saying, when we're talking about unfunded mandates and things like that, we must remember that tagging a bill does not equate to consultation. It's two different aspects of the legislative process. Tagging simply looks at which process, in terms of the Constitution, the bill must follow while in Parliament. That's all that tagging does. Consultation is a total different aspect. What the committee must do when it comes to consultation is to look at the content of the bill. And they look at the process that has happened to date and see if there's a gap in consultation, and then that must be filled. Now, I've already discussed with DDI, and I think there they can take this committee a bit further, but they are in position of a report done by independent consultants who have consulted with all the provinces on the two bills. In other words, there has been consultation with provinces. And I've requested them, and they are busy looking for the document, and they will provide that to this committee, because I think it's very important for this committee to consider what consultation has already taken place in the provinces. But, like I said, whether this committee decides that there's further consultation necessary or not, that does not affect the process, because the process is according to very strict guidelines that the Constitution sets out for us. And that is it. Thank you very much.
I think that's very clear. I don't know if members feel that because they only became aware of it last week and they've only had a full and clear briefing that they can vote with it now, because it's, I did ask Advocate Senator Miriver to go more into greater detail, because we don't want to find ourselves sitting at the wrong end of this decision again. But essentially, it becomes a decision or proposal that rests with the committee to move on if they see, if in their opinion, the tagging does not underpin the principle of the bill, the delivery itself. So if there's any reason that we believe that the current unit, by tagging it differently now, we're not going to achieve what we want to achieve, then we need to make this known to, I think it is, the tagging authorities. Pointed out, it's the issue of whether we should put two bills together or not. Not simply the tagging, but the actual, do we put these two bills together? Do we keep them separate? I think previously they were different tags, that was the issue. You know, one was tagged one way, one was tagged another way. Now he's proposing to turn it into one bill, and in doing that you keep on tagging. So I think if you want to raise any questions, now's the time to do it. Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, the explanation of the advocate is very clear. But on our side, as a portfolio committee, what implication does it have? Because when this bill was given to the speaker, to the presiding officer, they checked it as two. Is it going to be, are we expected to take the process of going to get a permission from the advocate to combine the two? Or can we just continue as if nothing has happened?
put back to Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. So there's a couple of options open to the committee, and I will also take it up with the NA table to make sure that when this committee reports back, we word it specifically correct. But the one way to go forward is to simply combine the two bills in a redraft. Committee has done a redraft before on the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill. So we will work on a redrafted bill, which will combine the two bills into one. When this committee records, at the end of the process, we'll only have one report. And only outstanding question, and this is what I will hear up with the NA table, is whether the report will reject the one bill and simply state that it was incorporated into the other bill, or whether the report will simply state the two bills have been combined. And I think that would be the preferred wording, but I will confirm with the NA table so that we are 100% also online with them. But there's no need to proceed with two bills. This committee is allowed to redraft, and because this committee is allowed to redraft, nothing prevents you from bringing one bill that deals with the same content. If it was two different sets of content, we would have had a problem. But they both deal with cooperatives, and therefore they can form one bill.
Got with us today the state law advisor here, Advocate Alan Small. Do you want to add anything here, Advocate?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I fully agree with Advocate van der Merwe, because the two bills deal with the same subject matter and they both were tagged as 75, it would be easier for the committee to work from and have a redraft in a sense of one bill to be presented. She's also correct with the other two issues about the whether or not the one will be rejected or the one will be just reported on that it is joint now. Also, if I can say other things. I think it will also make much better sense in legislation when the bill is interpreted that it is read as one bill, if any the matter is taken up or tested. And like she said, that 75 is the right thing there, and I think if the committee is started, though, we have worked on a merge already, and we are ready to submit if the committee decides like that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Moore. Is the, yes, the ETI are still here. Mr. Ndomo, the ministry, the department submits a table to fill that too. What was the reason for that?
Well, we got an advice from our legal expert in that regard. That's why it was made a two-bill, because the issue at the time was that it will implicate provinces, and therefore in that particular regard, that's why it has to be separated into the two sections, 75 and 76. And then, so our position at the moment is that we will take the cue from the Portfolio Committee on this matter, and the bill, we are very comfortable for it to be one. Initially, as a department, we drafted it as one and submitted it as one, and then the lawyer, the legal advice, separated it. So we are comfortable with it being one. Thank you, Chair.
All right, the constructive. Let me just get the rest of some of these time here, Advocate Paul, and then I'll come over to the committee.
Yes, Chair. I've only been going into it now, but it was from our office that at the time that they thought that it does affect provinces directly, the second part, and that's the reason they split it initially. However, once it came from the joint tagging mechanism, we reviewed it and we tend to agree that the logic used at the time is that maybe should lean towards 75, which I don't think on the matter, but it alluded to. I do concede that it is after split it, but what would make it easier by making it into one again and making it into a redraft, it would prevent a lot of confusion with having the A list, and where we have an opportunity then as a committee to do it as a redraft, which all the comments made by the committee and the department to include certain or rephrase or change or add the definitions, which will then be allowed, because then it will be an amended presented by the committee, the redraft version. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Colleague Chair. My question, first of all, thanks there, because these inputs make us understand better. But there's two questions. When the bill that came Act of 2005, was your case two? So that one element, the 75, the other element, the 72. So, and then we come now, we also have a component that was originally seen as a 26 and another one as a 75. When we intervene them to become 75, both of them, those aspects that informed that the one part be 76, What have they had? What happened to those aspects? Is it because it was misallocated to call 76? Thanks, Colleague.
But do the expert state law advisor, can you comment before advocate and the wearer?
It was a state law advisor who worked on the product. It did come from the department to be one whole. It was there where the split came in. And I think Advocate Santa Marva has adequately explained and which how the joint tagging mechanism came to the decision that they passed 75. We agree with that final decision, and so it's a matter of just reversing, in a sense, back to what was initially tabled with our office, and that was one bill initially. I think maybe I would answer that.
I think the concern is, on the one, it's the way a 55 is dealt with by Parliament, the two houses, and the way in which the other one is dealt with. And so the question really is, now that it's going to be, we're going to get on the one tagging, and a different process will be followed by the two houses, okay, is there something substantive we may be losing out of, or will be diluted? And I think this is particularly relevant when it comes to engaging with the provinces, et cetera, et cetera. So if that is really the crux, I think, of what is being asked here, just a clarification. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chief. I think, if I can just explain, in our interaction with the state law advisor, what happened is we have a relatively recent case that affects tagging significantly. When I explain to you that we no longer look at long title and short title, we look at every single section. That comes from this specific case. It's the case of Tongwani. And what happened in the state law advisor's office was that one of the paragraphs a person understood differently. The person understood that if it affects provinces or they speak about provinces, the bill must be 76. But if you read the case fully, it is clear that if it affects provinces in respect of Schedule 4, in other words, it did not change the constitution. Because as the Constitution reads, if it is in Schedule 4, and then that is where you will tag it as 76. Now, just to give you an example, the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, which deals with all three spheres, was also tagged as 75. For the exact same reason, Schedule 4 does not have any provision for intergovernmental bodies. If it had that, then it would have been a 76. So that is where the issue came in. It was simply an interpretation of a court case that made for the difference.
And you know, as lawyers, as many lawyers have many opinions, but it seemed that we had a couple in our office that agreed, and in the end decided to advise the Senate that also understand how our interpretation was. Going forward, both bills have been tagged as 75 by the joint tagging mechanism. That means that both bills will follow the same process. There's no difference in the process, and that is in fact why it was split by the state law advisor. The National Assembly rules is you may not have a bill that is, has 75 and 76 matters in it. You must split it. So that is simply what happened. It was simply one interpretation of a court case. It led to the bills being separated and introduced separately. When we then re-looked at a case, we said, no, we don't agree with that interpretation, and the two bills have both been tagged as 75. And therefore, going forward, both bills will be dealt with as the same. There is no reason why they can't be joined.
I think what's relevant is also if members do pull out their constitutions, go over that to some extent. Honourable Hadebe.
Yes, I know the explanation is your outcome. I think that it is advisable for the committee to combine the two bills into one. And then let's have that proper wording by next week, so that when we have the combined bill, we have the proper wording after the advocate consulted with the table, so that we put it in a proper way. But I think that in principle we can agree that we cannot have two sections of the bills running parallel to each other. I think we can combine them into one, and then get the proper wording so that we'll make the reporting proper.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hadebe. The last person on the matter will be Honourable Mabasa.
I second what the Honourable Hadebe proposed.
Objections? Now, it seems that this is the way we will proceed on the matter. Let's get that in a fuller report and so on. Bring it back to the committee and then take it from that point on. So the mayor is agreed for us to go along with the one position, putting the two bills together and so on. I did say that was the last one, and I actually now want to insist that when I say last, it's last. Thanks. Members, look, Members, you've already done the Kenyan study. You've done all of the others. Okay, we are aware of that. With respect to announcements and closing remarks as such, the committee secretary has been asked to review the program to accommodate the new legislation. He will be letting us have a draft of this on Tuesday at Manco, so there may be some changes made along the line. Okay, so we ask everyone to look out for that as well. Just one point about the agenda. Perhaps members didn't bring the reports and things, all of them, because it wasn't very specific here. I think we do need to have that date, because Advocate van der Merwe has given us quite a few presentations. If we'd all known it was that specific one, that we had a system in every other bill with each piece of information was labelled, and that's fallen away suddenly, must come back, please, so that you say, bring A234, please, so that members, including myself, will be fully aware of what to bring. And I must say, too, that was really good that we have somebody else here as a full member, I think, that is yourself from PAC Advocate, Ms. Pashlele. Thank you very much indeed. You helped bring the tagging up. One note. Members, just a small point regarding the program. We only realized after our program was finalized and adopted that Parliament would have 2 days for the Women's Parliament, etc., and so our own meeting falls away again. So I apologize for that, but just as a confirmation that our next meeting will be next Wednesday, I hope we're all on board with that. I also want to thank the DTR for being here, the State Law Advisor, the DG, Mr. Lionel October and his team, and also Advocate Vanna Merva, with the team always preparing a very solid piece of information. I see so many faces that I may have forgotten here. But I'm looking here, there's a Ms. Cookamore, Mr. Rotten is here, and we said Mr. Jeffrey and Dormal. But the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor is also here. Thank you very, very much for being here. I've overlooked someone, simply because it's not on my list. I apologize, and I'm looking at someone in particular as I say that. I'm sorry, Advocate Susie. Subcommittee will be in KZN on the 3rd and 4th. That is Sunday, is it? And Monday or Monday and Tuesday. I hope everyone on that subcommittee is ready. Honourable Mabasa, you're leading that subcommittee, aren't you? So I'm sure you are working with the committee secretary on the matter. Thank you very much. Matt, the meeting is adjourned, please. Thank you. I'd appreciate it.